Of the Hornets, don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play so far.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. It makes us ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, powered by Bama Hammer. Looks like Coach Sumlin picked the wrong weekend to come to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, man, this team was happy to have some home cooking, play in front of their fans. You know, they just haven't learned how to, you know, they haven't learned how to play through adversity on the road yet. And hopefully this will help them out because they got a couple hard weeks up ahead.
Yeah, hopefully this is the confidence boost and young team continues to grow and mature. And hopefully they'll figure out a way to bottle this up so they can spritz a little bit before the next game, huh?
No, absolutely. I think, this is a team that just still has to find their way. They haven't done this yet. And this is not a Texas A&M team that came into the game, you know, ranked second or third in the country in passing yards per game. And I think their quarterback came in ranked second in the country in several categories, completions, pass yards, completion percentages, et cetera. You know, you and I said several times during this football game that, you know, just pick whatever the score was at the moment that we said it. We said this isn't a 35-0 Texas A&M team. This isn't a 42-0 Texas A&M team. Everything that could have gone wrong for them did. You know, it's not like they had a lot of turnovers, but it just, you know, we had a flush down the toilet game. This was their flush down the toilet game.
Yeah, this was a pretty horrid performance on their part. And on the same token, though. It was a spectacular performance for our team. They came out and Alabama played with a lot more emotion, a lot more passion, a lot more investment. It appeared in the game, and I read an article that was quoting some material by Danny Sheridan, and you know, he's pretty good at what he does, analyzing games and breaking down trends and stuff in the action. And he has sort of a proprietary metric where he goes through and evaluates every week every team's performance. I think he's been doing this since about 2008, 2007, that time frame. And he gives it a grade, and it's a formula based on yardage gained, running and passing and scoring and third down conversions and, you know, everything that your opponent does and who you're playing and where you're playing them and all those types of sort of metrics that can be distilled down. And he said this was the highest rated performance that his system has ever kicked out. This is, in sort of the parlance of Danny Sheridan, as close to a perfect game as it comes. That's pretty impressive, and that pretty well matches with the experience, right?
Oh, sure. This team, you know, Nick Saban talked a few weeks ago about it's tough to live up to the hype, you know, week in, week out, year in, year out. I mean, this team's won 3 national championships in 5 years, and most teams can't say they've won one in the past 5 years or ever. And so it's almost like they needed a spark. You know, fortunately they won, you know, that Arkansas game by a point. And They definitely just seem to, you know, even making tackles on special teams and defense. And, you know, it was just nice to see that they were having fun out there playing, I guess is what I'll say. I mean, these are still kids. They're not grown men. And it was nice to see them having fun what they were doing.
Yeah, I was afraid that the pressure, obviously there was a loss and then there was a, you know, a close game against, and I know it kind of pissed off Saban, but, you know, there's a reality that's a win that kind of felt like a loss given the heightened expectations. And so I was afraid the team was playing a little tight, and I was concerned how that would sort of carry over. This very much seemed like a pivot point that they kind of hit the refresh button, started having fun again. And I hope we see more of this tide throughout the season than maybe the version that we've seen the first half so far. Why don't you dive us into offense? What are some of the things that jumped out to you?
Well, I was surprised to see how quickly we went to the pass side of things. You know, that first series, they passed the ball 6 times out of 8 plays. You know, they rolled Blake Sims out in the flats the very first play, got him behind, you know, got him out from behind those offensive linemen. We've talked about him being comfortable out there in the, you know, out there in the flats. And so, you know, that was the first play to DeAndre White, and, you know, they get 17 yards right away. And then that little play that they throw behind the line of scrimmage, they did it 3 times in a row. And the next thing you know, they're at the 24-yard line of Texas A&M. So it was just interesting how I think it was all about Blake Sims' confidence. I think it was all about, let's throw these little short gadget, you know, yak plays. Gary Danielson said on the TV that he felt like 2 of the plays were run plays. He thought Blake Sims checked out of it to passing plays because the corners gave a 7-yard cushion at the snap of the ball. And so that's why he did it. But it was just interesting how we came out. This wasn't beat you up out of the block. This was, you know, try to throw on the edges like we've seen them do a lot this year.
Yeah, and that's good, right, that we can go out and design some plays that are going to make, you know, the quarterback comfortable, and, you know, by extension, it's going to make the offense comfortable. And also the fact that, you know, Blake has some flexibility and some autonomy to call the plays and go up and look at the line of scrimmage. And it may just be, you know, a 1 or 0 type play call. He may go up to the huddle with just 2 options, but he has the option of checking out of something. And looks like, you know, he had some pretty good success doing that. Marched us down the field on the first possession, almost had a pick 6, could have gone the other way, but settled down, got the field goal. And, you know, our first 8 possessions turned into scores after that field goal. We ran off 7 straight touchdowns in a row, possessions for touchdowns in a row. Geez, that's pretty darn impressive. That gets you to that gets the score up there really quick, right?
Oh, it does. I was surprised at this Texas A&M defense, though. I, you know, they're not a bad team. I mean, this is a team that was preseason top 5 in the country, you know, thought that they could be one of the 4 playoff teams. And you got a quarterback that has shown that, you know, he's not always able to fit it into a tight window. And I'm no defensive coordinator, and no one's ever paid me to try to be one. But I was surprised that they didn't come out and just, you know, put their corners on an island, get in the wide receivers' faces. Amari Cooper's banged up from the week before. DeAndre White's been banged up this year. I mean, take nothing away from our performance, but the defense made it pretty easy. I mean, there are several plays that they were 7 yards off the ball at the snap, and they backpedaled 10, and Blake Sims drops it to a wide-open guy 7 yards off the line of scrimmage, and it was like pitch and catch.
Yeah, they were definitely stacked up against the run. I think, you know, maybe they studied the game film of the last 2 games a little more closely and didn't look at some of the other games. I guess in particular the Florida game where Blake showed a lot more capability that he has not demonstrated, you know, maybe over the last month. And maybe they invested more effort in saying, hey, this quarterback cannot beat us. Alabama's going to come out at home and run the ball. Let's stack the run. We'll put a zone on top of that, and that's going to be a good game plan for us. But we saw the Blake Sims against A&M that we saw against Florida, felt very comfortable, made a wide variety of of throws, including strikes downfield, and really was not off his game all day long. And just to put a cherry on top, he runs for what turns out to be the longest rush, our longest rush for the season on a little design run for a touchdown. So that was a nice little capper.
Oh, it was. He didn't have a lot of pressure in his face, right? He didn't have a lot of guys on him, hanging on him. He had a clean pocket.
Sure.
He had wide open receivers. You know, I'm only saying it that way because I just want to call it for what it is. Did he have a good game? Yes. Did he make good decisions except for that one at the goal line? Yes. You know, I still want to see how he responds to a team that has 2 shutdown corners, get in your faces, and, you know, give their defensive line time to get to the quarterback and see what we do.
Well, I hope the offensive line continues to play this well. I think Coach really challenged them this week, and they really rose to the occasion. You know, when you play for, you know, play with an empty pocket, that's not a knock on the quarterback, but that's high praise for the offensive line. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a quarterback that's having sustained success without having, you know, a strong offensive line in front of them. So I'm glad to see that they kind of rallied after putting up some what I thought were a couple of really poor performances, especially last week against Arkansas. It looked like Bradley Bozeman kind of settled down. You know, I don't think he was tipping quite the way that he was before, and he seemed to perform with a higher degree of comfort. You know, we flopped a couple of guys at guard a little bit. Austin Shepherd went down. Grant Hill stepped in. I thought the first unit, even with some of those changes when we were still running the first team offense, I think the first unit there across the offensive line looked very, very positive.
I think they had a good day. I just don't think that they brought the blitz package and really went after the quarterback. You know, one play in particular that I remember from the first quarter of the game, you know, I want to give Blake Sims kudos for making a good decision. But just to set this up for the listeners, you know, it was first and 10, and we were about midfield, and we do a play-action pass. And they're sending four guys, okay? We got five guys in to protect, and our five guys, to your point, are able to handle their pressure. And so, I beg your pardon, we had a tight end in it as well. So we got six guys to block four guys, right? They dropped seven. We've only got three guys in the route. And then TJ Yeldon bleeds out all by himself on the sideline. And Blake Sims, because he's got all day to throw, releases it to a safety valve. He makes two guys miss and gets 20 yards. My point of pointing that out is you drop seven guys in coverage and you can't cover the four people, including the running back in the flats. So that's my point is they send four guys to go after the quarterback. We got a tight end in there. And so, of course, our six guys can block four. It goes back to your leading comment of them bringing their A game. Whereas we played with passion and we took what the defense gave us, they just played very lethargic. They kind of played like they didn't give a shit to be there, quite frankly.
Yeah, they didn't have a sound game plan, but, you know, it's hard to take away from just the outstanding performance we had. I mean, 602 yards, you know, 30 first downs, no turnovers, no penalties on offense, 80 plays, averaging, you know, 7.5 yards per play over the course of the ball game. There's a lot to like with what we did. Did you see anything else that jumped out to you on offense?
Well, and just to your point there real quick, I'm not taking away from what we did. I'm just calling it like I see it, that I don't feel like we were tested in this game by their defensive game plan. So we took what they gave us, and you know, we did put up 59 points, which, you know, we could have scored 20 and we'd be ticked off that we had missed opportunities. I just was surprised at the game plan they came to us with. No, I want to point out Bradley Bozeman. We kind of talk about was it Drew? What was Drew's last name that played right tackle for us?
Drew Davis.
Yeah, remember Drew Davis? You know, you didn't talk about him in the podcast because there wasn't anything to talk about because he wasn't getting beat. Well, Bozeman, you know, coming out there now in now as a starter, there was nothing glaring. You know, he didn't get pushed 5 yards into Blake Sims' face like we've seen some centers do in the past. He wasn't out physicaled. He didn't need help from double team blocking from the guards. I'm not saying he railroaded his guy 5 yards down the field, but he put a hat on a hat, and I thought he had a really good day.
Absolutely, yeah, I thought he performed very well. We did when we brought in the second teams, and I miscalled it at the game because I was looking for another player, but we did burn the red shirt on J.C. Hassenauer. He played some center after Bozeman. What do you think about that decision?
I think it's a bad decision by the coaching staff. They know what the injury status is with these players.
Yep.
They had to know. They had to know how close Ryan Kelly was to being able to be back. And so it's kind of like last year. They blew D-liner's red shirt after some injuries to Dalvin Tomlinson and somebody else, and we didn't see D-liner again in the on the field. I think in that situation, Bozeman needs the work. You just keep Bozeman out there and see if he can play a whole football game, and you don't burn that kid's red shirt.
Yeah, I agree. That may have been the worst coaching decision that we saw all day. I agree that Bozeman could use some additional work. You know, the big news out of practice today was that Ryan Kelly's practicing and expected back next week. Coaches knew that. So, you know, we could get another quarter out of Bozeman. He would be that much more prepared. Or if you want to mix it up, you know, Grant Hill took some snaps. I know he's your backup tackle, but he took some snaps at center. I think you could move things around. Dominic Jackson could move around a little bit more. I think there's, you know, Isaac Lotua has done some snapping. So I think there's some things that you can do, you know, keep Bozeman in until maybe midway through the fourth, and then, you know, then do a little bit of creative shuffling rather than burn a red shirt at this point in the season. Because if, you know, if all goes as expected, JC won't play again. And so that turns out being a pretty expensive red shirt because, you know, Kelly's going to be back and then Bradley's going to have some season to him. And so he's going to be there ready to play. I just don't see JC playing anymore this season. It seems an expensive burn.
It is. And the only people that's upset about that is us, him, and his parents.
it's a small group that probably even recognize that he played, but yeah, those that understand the implication probably not pleased with that.
Hey, real quick before you jump on something else on offense, I just wanted to mention we talked during the game on our first touchdown. We did a pitch sweep to Yeldon, and yep. It allowed him, you know, it allowed them to, you know, spread the lanes on the outside, and he was able to find his cutback. And we talked during the game in person about how we need to see more of that. You know, I think with the talent that we have at running back, we need to be doing these pitch sweeps a lot more on all, you know, all yards and distance on the field. It's something that I don't think enough teams do anymore. And I'd like to see more of that as the season progresses.
Yeah, I like the toss sweep. Always kind of been a fan of that. Let your talented, you know, the whole spread offense is about getting your, you know, talented players in position to make decisions and move the ball. Well, the toss sweep is sort of an old school version of that, right? You pitch it out to your talented tailback and you let him, you know, kind of pick the hole. I mean, there's a sort of a designed hole, but you let him. He has some space to operate and to make some moves. I thought we had some good success with that over the last couple of weeks, but saw a little bit more of that Saturday. I would certainly like to see that a few more times this season. We should plan to run that 8 to 12 times a game. Anything else on offense catch your eye?
I wish I wouldn't have seen Brian Vogler out there as much. He looked very gimpy. You know, I felt like, you know, while it didn't matter with the score, it felt very obvious that he was coming in on blocking situations. I would have liked to have seen Brandon Green get some work. I think he served his time well. He's a big kid. You bring him in at goal line to block. Is he not good enough to do third and fourth to 50 if he can be on goal line? You know, give Vogler a little rest. And make it more unpredictable as to what Vogler's going to do when he comes into the game.
Yeah, I agree. And Ty Flournoy-Smith got some run. I'd like to see him get a little bit more because, you know, we think that he's, you know, he might be more of the complete package mix of a receiving tight end. He had a touchdown in this game as well as a blocking tight end. So I'd like to see him get a little more run. If Vogler's a little banged, hey, I respect the fact that he's a senior. He wants to get out there. He wants to show, you know, show through leadership and continue to play. But, you know, there's an opportunity to get other guys in there too because there's still a lot of season to go. You know, just real quick notes on offense that I saw. Incredibly strong running by T.J. Yeldon. I mean, he just continued to do what he does. Very understated in a lot of ways, but he's an incredibly productive back. I thought Derrick Henry showed a little more want to in his style. Could have lowered his shoulder into a DB a couple of times, but I think he was running with a little more tenacity. And I'm just happy to see our Darius Stewart back on the offense. He only had one catch, but he threw a couple blocks and was out in the formations. We tried to go to him once on a double move down the field. Pass was a little bit late getting there. If Sims had thrown that out there just a couple seconds earlier, Ardarius would have a touchdown under his belt. So glad to see him out there, and the fact that we are trying to work him into the offense, I think he can still be a weapon for us.
Hey, one more thing, you know, or two more things on what you just said there. You know, we didn't have the benefit of this because we were at the game, but, you know, on the TV version, it was surprising to see that T.J. Yeldon, when he got a rushing touchdown in this game, mm-hmm. it was his first rushing touchdown since the opening game of the season.
Ah, that's a great stat.
So that is, you know, I'm sure most of the listeners that watched the game on TV saw that, but I just thought that was interesting that, you know, our number one back did not score a rushing touchdown for, you know, five football games.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to mention real quick is that as far as the offense is concerned, you mentioned the Ardarius Stewart throw. We might as well point out very quickly that we called that on a turnover. It was a good time to take a shot down the field about midfield before the play. And we said we'd like to see the tight end down the hash.
Yep.
And O.J. Howard releases down the hash, and Blake just held on to the ball too long. And I'm only pointing this out because a minute ago I said he made a good decision. Well, he had a couple, you know, in a 59-0 game, he, you know, played a good game, but he had some shots down the field that we missed on. And so I hope this team continues to work on that. Because I think what these defenders are going to do, Mississippi State and LSU, is they're going to say, you know what, we're going to try to shut you down from 0 to 10 yards, and we're going to give over-the-top help on Amari, and you're going to have to beat us down the field. And you're going to have to show us that you can consistently beat us down the field. And yeah, that's what this team needs to keep working on.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's something of a sign of an experienced quarterback that can – throw the ball before the receiver's open. Throw the ball out there before, you know, if it's a double move kind of play, throw the ball out there knowing where the receiver's going to be even before the receiver makes the move. And that's a very nuanced thing. It's easy to kind of look at that in hindsight. And I agree with you. He missed on both of those passes. Had he let it fly just a little bit earlier, you know, both of those would have gone for touchdowns. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that, you know, with a little more experience, he makes those throws, but he's looking for the receiver to be open before he lofts the ball rather than putting it on there knowing that he's going to be open.
You're right. And what I want to say there is just trust him, right?
Yep.
Just throw it up there. And the analogy is throw it where they're the only one that can go get it. And if they don't get it, so what? Incomplete, start over.
Yeah. Now, one thing you've mentioned before, and you know, we kind of put this on the conversation as well, is that he seems to be a little more comfortable doing that with an Amari Cooper, but not with some of the other guys. And so, it's a skill, it's a capability that he has. I just wonder if he holds it that extra second with some of these other receivers not named Amari.
Well, that's a great point because on Amari's touchdown, you know, we also talked in the game that I truly believe that Amari Cooper is the only one that catches that touchdown pass.
Yes.
And he is the only wide receiver on our roster who would have, you know, leaped at a 45-degree angle in the air and sacrificed his body and been able to judge the angle to catch a overthrown ball.
Yep.
Everybody else would have either given up on the route or would have missed it.
Well, he just throws it up there. He feels a lot more comfortable, you know, heaving it down the field for Amari because he knows I'm going to put it out here where Amari can go get it or nobody gets it. And I think that he's a little bit more hesitant. And it's that half a second, it's that half a heartbeat is the difference. He just doesn't have that same fearlessness, if you will, with the other receivers. And I can understand that. I can understand why that would be the case. I think he's just got to pick his spots and let it fly in those situations. And I think he will. I think that'll come. But, you know, it's good to see that we're working to those players. I hope that we can. And look, it's a 59-0 game. So, you know,
yes.
It's hard pressed to be too upset with that kind of performance. Hey, why don't you give us your offensive mini game ball?
Yeah, my game ball is going to go to two big uglies.
Okay.
My first one's going to be Leon Brown.
Okay.
Nice. He came in to be a tackle. That's what his job was. We thought he was going to come in and win left tackle. He's being a team player. He's finding a home that he's comfortable in at guard right now. He seems to have beaten out Alfonso Taylor. He came in the game in Arkansas and started giving us some push because Alfonso wasn't giving it to us. He started this game again, and he looked pretty worn out in this football game because it was hot out there. But I thought he played a hell of a game, and I thought Airy played a hell of a game.
Yeah.
I didn't see Airy really – I didn't see any mistakes. When he pulled, he got to his guy. He was noticeably limping off that field after saying his prayers at the midfield, but he left it all on the field, and it was a 59-0 game. They both could have checked it in because it's a 59-0 game. And so either A, they know that there's people that want their jobs, or B, they're just busting their tail, and I just thought they both played a good game.
Well, I hope it's a little of both. nothing like busting your tail because you know there's competition behind you. I'm going to stick with the offensive line theme because I think that's, I really liked what we saw there. And for reasons already mentioned, I'm going to go Bradley Bozeman. You know, in his second start, I think the improvement that he demonstrated, and again, I get that it's different defenses, but the improvement that that he demonstrated between his first start and his second start, I thought were pretty nice. He looked a lot more comfortable out there, and I think he's going to be a good player for us. So I'm giving a tip of the cap to Bozeman.
All right, man. Well, start us off on defense. What jumped out at you?
Man, I'll be a little contrarian on this one. The thing that jumped out to me when I saw the stat sheet that Texas A&M had 172 yards on offense, my first reaction was, really? They had that many?
Okay. Didn't seem like they had that many, huh?
No, they had 9 punts on the ball game. They punted each of their first 6 possessions. They had a turnover on downs and lost the ball at half. And, you know, they were 2 of 13 on third down, conversions. I think their big play was 13 yards or 15 yards. I think they had a run for, right at 11 or 12. But that was it. They were so roundly stifled. Which was good, to see. We've kind of struggled with A&M, and I get a different quarterback and all that, but there's a little bit of head case, it seems like, we've had with Texas A&M. And so I think Saban and Smart were happy to exercise some of those demons.
I'm sure they were. And, Texas A&M came into this game, like I said, being a very prolific passing team, they started off the season putting hanging 50 on South Carolina, and everybody was saying that this is quarterback you, and out sure. comes Johnny Manziel, and I'm not going to call him the other name because I just don't like it.
Sure.
And in comes Kenny Hill, and where's this season going to go for them? They get back, their receiver that put a dagger in our heart in Tuscaloosa, and Malcolm Kennedy. And I found it interesting that they went to him early and often. I mean, this game plan was all about trying to get Malcolm Kennedy involved because he was the one guy that they felt like, could really open things up. Well, he finished the game with 4 catches for 4 yards. And what's interesting about that is they threw the ball to him 3 times on the opening drive. And so I thought that was an interesting stat that, their go-to receiver who's been hurt for 2 weeks comes back and they're doing empties and 4 wides and 5 wides. And, they're trying to get him involved and he can only get 4 catches for 4 yards. I don't know if that speaks to the DBs as much as I think it speaks to our front 4.
Yep.
I'm going to tell you that I think the many game balls is too many to go around to the 7 and 8 guys that rotate in the front 4 positions. I thought they played lights out. I can't think of a game where I can't remember a game. And you know, I'd have to go back and do some digging. And how many football games would we have to go back to find a game where we have six sacks in one ball game?
Good Lord. We've gone a month without six sacks before. This goes back to this was a type of performance that I envisioned from, you know, from our, you know, front, from our front seven. In particular, if you want to just say the defensive line, you know, when we talked about in our preseason shows, you know, we talked about the defensive line being a weapon, not just a stopgap, not just big bodies out there that are going to, you know, stand in the way of blockers so our linebackers can make plays, but that the defensive front was going to be a weapon that was going to be material to our success this season. And this was the type of performance that and we've seen it. We've seen flashes. We've seen it a couple of times this season. And I think the defensive line is getting better and better. But this, you know, this you could put a crown on top of this type of performance. This is what I had sort of envisioned or hoped or dreamed that the defensive line could be. And boy, if they can continue to execute at this level. And what's funny is Alphonse A'shaun Robinson, one of our favorites across the defensive front, he pretty much had a quiet day. And so it's interesting that we had such a – and that doesn't mean he wasn't productive. It just didn't have a stat line. But, it you know, to think that one of our better guys had a quiet day, but we still put up such a dominating performance up front, man, that's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. And I'm going to tell you, this is also without Denzel Duvall.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
yep. Who's a big football player on this team.
Absolutely.
And I think this speaks to the depth that is finally materializing on the defensive side of the ball. But this is also to Nick Saban's coaching staff and their credit for the recruiting job that they did, because they went out there and said, you know what? We got a lot of young guys and the light switch has not come on yet. And so we've got to go get some veteran leadership from the JUCO ranks that can come in and help these guys out. And so what do? They go get two of the top JUCO players in the country in Jaron Reed and DJ Pettway. And so you sprinkle those kids in, and now you've got a Jonathan Allen as a sophomore, but then you got a Xavier Dixon, and then you've got a Ryan Anderson. And that's the biggest thing, man. I mean, look at this stat line. The number one guy was Ryan Anderson, 4 tackles, 2 assists, tackle for loss, right? I mean, the biggest thing to me is the light bulb coming on for Ryan Anderson and yep. Xavier Dixon.
Yep.
And that's the thing that is so exciting, is because they finally seem comfortable. And this is not even talking about Reggie Raglan, right?
Oh,
and
good.
So and Reggie Raglan on the second play of the game, you know, they do a little end around to Malcolm Kennedy trying to get him involved. And Reggie Raglan from inside the box runs him out on the sideline, the true sideline to sideline.
Mm-hmm.
Dude's lost about 10 pounds of water weight since the season started, because he definitely looks quicker to me than he did in week one. And man, we are seeing that kid's. That kid is going to hold on to his starting job the rest of the season.
I think he's lost a lot of weight kind of from the jump. He had real just massive thighs and looked like he'd start a fire if he were wearing corduroy pants or something. I mean, his thighs were just so thick that, they definitely, you know, I'm not saying he's not athletic or wasn't athletic then, but I'm just saying he looked like it was cumbersome for him to really run and move. And he seems to move. I still don't think he's, you know, a stud in coverage, even though he got a pick this week. So, you know, maybe I just keep talking bad about him and he'll just keep playing better, because he is one player on the team. And there's a couple that you could point to specifically, but he just seems to continue to play better and better and better with each passing week. And that doesn't always translate to the stat line, but it's just, where are they being productive? How is it that they're making plays to contribute to the bottom line? And Raglan is just one of those guys. Every week he's gotten better. You could chart it over the season, you know, on some coaching metrics, and his performance just continues to improve.
It does. Hey, one other thing I want to say real quick. This is not defense, but I want to flip the field back to the offense for just a quick second, because you made a great point during the game, and I don't want this to be lost in translation. in the second quarter, at the beginning of the second quarter, it was a 10-0 ball game. And third and goal, we call a passing play, and we don't succeed. And so it's fourth and goal. And Saban tells that kicking, you know, field goal unit to get your butt back on the sideline. We're going for it from the 2-yard line. Mm-hmm. And you made a great comment. You said Nick Saban's tired of close ball games. He doesn't want this to be a close ball game. And I just wanted to jump back on this real quick because, you know, that could have been a field goal. It's 13-0. Instead, we go for it and show some domination at the 2 and make it a 17-point ball game. And that's what started the second quarter that proceeded to have us hang 35 points on them in the second quarter.
No, that was a good point. I remember us talking about that. Well, on third down, we tried to look like a little inside pass to Amari, which, you know, it's probably a little ill-conceived. And so you're right. We ran it back out there and you know, went to a real power formation and it just ran it into the end zone. And we kind of kidded, you know, well, who do you think called that play? And, you know, my kind of snarky remark was, I think Saban walked up to Kiffin and said, you can call third down, but I'll call fourth down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. I wanted to point that out because we talked about that in the game, and that was just a good point that I think he said, you know, we're going to exert our will in this ball game.
Yeah.
It is time to put our foot on the throat. Hey, what else jumped out at you on defense? Were you surprised that Eddie Jackson got the start?
No, I don't think that I was. You know, I think Eddie and Cyrus are playing very, very well together. I think Eddie brings obviously a little more experience than does Tony Brown. But I think, you know, when we started some of the very early rotations on defense, we took Eddie out and brought Tony in. And I think that's reflective. And so he was playing with the starters. I think that's reflective of, you know, coach likes to say that we have more starters at positions than sometimes there are positions. And we talk about that in our preseason guide. And I think there's a lot of rationale to that. I think at that cornerback position, he does really look at Eddie and Tony is one, you know, 1A and 1B kind of at that position opposite Cyrus. I think there's also a little bit of pitch count with Eddie Jackson still coming back from his new knee injury and us wanting to be really, really careful about that. You know, Saban will sometimes play, you know, sometimes talk about if a guy's injured or a guy is hurt, that, you know, sometimes that's part of the game and they've got to play through it. And I think there's something to that. I have sensed and read and seen him say more about we have to take care of Eddie Jackson's injury. And so I think that's a little interesting. You know, I'm not saying that he doesn't care about the player's health and all that. I'm not saying that at all. I just think he's recognizing this is a different type of injury and we need to treat it, you know, different from a hangnail and some guy not being tough, that we need to kind of, you know, manage Eddie Jackson, you know, maybe protect him from himself a little bit. And so we're going to bring Tony Brown in there to give him some reps, you know, because we do consider him a starter quality player. So let's get them both out on the field. So long answer for your question. No, I wasn't surprised to see Eddie Jackson, and I continue to kind of pound the desk on Cyrus Jones. You know, he's another one of those guys I would say that continues to play better every week. And, he's a tough one. He's, you know, he's going to be a tough one to get off the field.
Hey, what did you think about the passing defense, by us? Because we seem to be sticking with our base nickel in this game.
Yep.
A lot of nickel, a lot of Trey and Reggie out there together. You know, obviously Jarrett Williams, you know, was manning the star, but you know, lots of their plays were short passes, and we seem to be running a decent amount of zone coverage in this game as opposed to true man. And you know, with the physical nature of our inside linebackers, I just was surprised they didn't have more success in their 4 and 5 wides on those crossing routes, you know, behind our linebackers.
Well, you know, I think some of that ties back to the defensive front, that they were getting some push and they were making the quarterback, and in fact, they played two quarterbacks. They were making the quarterbacks uncomfortable. And I think that had that certainly had something to do with it. I mean, you know, you and I can cover a receiver if the quarterback's not going to have a chance to throw it, right? And so
Not that it was quite that dramatic, but I think the defensive front was making some noise, and that made some of the coverage a little bit easier. You would think with some of their tall receivers that you would attack the middle of the field. That's certainly what I would do against us, and kind of get our linebackers leaning the wrong way with some of those quality receivers. But it could be that part of it was they didn't have time, and part of it was that didn't seem to be what they wanted to do.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that about the pressure. So I will say real quick, there was a series in the second quarter, which was funny. You know, they did a lot of bunch formations, you know, because we've had some miscues, right? We've had breakdowns on those 3 and 4 bunch formations. Those, I guess more of the 3 formations, but they did the 4 wide receivers in a bunch, which I haven't seen a lot of. And it was interesting on first down, they basically threw it to the back guy and let the other 3 block, and Trey DePriest like reads it like before the quarterback even throws it, and they lose 3 yards. Well, then the very next play, they line up in the same formation and they fake it to the guy, and they're going to try to take a strike down the field. Well, buddy, as soon as he like goes to like fake the throw, he's looking at Ryan Anderson and Xavier Dixon in his face. So to your point, like, 3 second drop and he's in the shotgun, right? 3 second drop and they're in his face and they're pushing the pocket. And so I definitely think that has something to do with it. He seemed to have happy feet in this ball game.
Yeah, absolutely. What else on defense jumped out at you?
Nothing else. Just like you, surprised that, a team coming in here averaging, 350 yards passing, can't even get half of that in total offense.
Yeah. All right. You want to move to mini game ball?
I do. As far as a mini game ball, I guess I can't give it to the whole defensive line. And so I'm going to surprise you here, and I'm going to give it to DJ Pettway.
Okay.
And you're going to ask me why, because DJ didn't really do anything on the stat sheet. Man, it's just because I'm glad he's back out there. All 8 of those guys played a great game. I could give it to Xavier. I could give it to Ryan Anderson again. But DJ Pettway, I was concerned he had blew a knee. And he comes back the very next week. I think he's one of those edge guys that we really are going to need against Mississippi State and Auburn. And I was glad to see him back out there.
Okay, very good. I'm going to give my mini game ball, and I agree, it's you want to give it to the entire defensive front, just like we wanted to give the mini game ball to the entire offensive front. But I'm giving my mini game ball, tip of the cap, to the defensive front. I'm giving it in the person of Tim Williams. Here's a guy who's has battled his way out of the doghouse, has gotten more and more playing time. The dude's a beast, and when he gets an opportunity to play, it's like he's shot out of a cannon coming around the edge, affecting the quarterback. So I'm giving a little nod there to Tim Williams.
All right, man.
Hey, I'm also I do have an honorable mention, and I'm going to do this, and it's going to segue into special teams. I do have an honorable mention game ball. I don't know if this is offense or defense, so this is just an extra game ball that I have. I am giving it to the PA team or the PA guy. At one point, they played and I don't know the name of the song. I'm not so much into this style of music, but LAMFAO, I think. They played some like a little house music kind of tune, and there was a little line in that song that had sort of a playful jab at Led Zeppelin, who we all know is the greatest rock band in the history of rock bands. And then immediately after, they cut that song and then actually played a Zeppelin tune. So I thought that was pretty cool. I was probably, including me and the PA guy, I was probably one of 3 people in the entire stadium who recognized that. But the better thing...
So do you want a game ball for being one of the 3 people in the stadium?
Yeah, you can give me a game ball for that. The better performance that really, really sort of cemented the mini game ball is on, and this is the segue to special teams, when Christian Jones had his punt return for 47 yards, immediately, as if they had their finger over the button every time Christian Jones touched the ball, "How You Like Me Now" played. So I thought that was pretty fitting and probably a good segue into special teams.
Well, man, go ahead and start it off, man. Go ahead and tell the listeners what you were talking about the little love fest between Saban and Chris John Jones and the hand gestures and the expressions that were going on every time he stepped out there on for punt return.
Yeah, you know, there was the very first punt return. You know, Chris John goes out there and so, you know, probably not surprised that he was back there, but you know, it was a question who's
gonna I be was back there. He shouldn't have been.
Well, you know, who's going to be back there filling him? And so one of the first times I've ever seen Chris John Jones fair catch a ball. And in fact, he probably had more fair catch. This would be an interesting study. He probably had more fair catches Saturday than he's had in his career. But he had a fair catch on his first punt return and, you know, flipped the ball to official. And he starts running towards the sideline. And he gets, you know, maybe 10 yards to Saban. It's clear that he's communicating to Saban. And he just kind of puts his arms out like, do you like that? And Saban just walked up to him, patted him on the head, and said, good job. We got the ball at the 28, or whatever the yard line was. You know, it was like, we possess the ball further down the field.
We as a team have the ball. That's all I care about.
Exactly. Our team has the ball at a favorable field position. So I thought that was kind of funny. And so then it kind of got to be, you know, he fair caught a couple. And then on the punt return, you and I noticed this, I'm sure other people did too, but he ran diagonally backwards, which is the kind of thing like, here's where we've gotten onto him before. He caught the ball, took a step, bobbled it, regrouped, and then he was gone. I mean, literally shot out of a cannon, gone. Once he secured possession of the ball, he was down the sidelines, and it was just – that was a pretty impressive return that he had right there. I knew that he was fast. That was one of those plays where you realize he is dynamic fast. We need to figure out how we get him worked into it. He was so fast, you think we've got to figure out how to get him the ball in space and in the offense, because you know this is really what he's capable of when he'll sort of get out of his own head and play.
Well, and you know, we talked about this last week, man. We talked about, you know, him getting antsy because he's not getting the opportunities, you know, in the offensive set. And you don't know if it's Lane Kiffin. You really scratch your head because this is a fifth-year senior that, you know, his biggest, you know, his favorite play was to drag him behind the line of scrimmage and throw it to him in the flat that, you know, and he would get 10 yards out of it. So it makes you wonder why we're not getting him the ball, even on that that wide receiver end around you hate, you know, instead of Amari Cooper, give it to him.
I'm not mad at the end around. It's who we run it with and more of a dynamic scat back type player, a little bit shorter, a little bit more sort of nimble in that way. Chris John Jones fits that mold. Amari Cooper is much taller. He's a bigger target. He's a little more lanky. Oh, and he's also one of the best receivers in college football. So why would you get him hurt running an end around, right? I'm not mad at the play. I'm mad at, you know, sort of who we have run it.
And no, I understand. And you know, I think Lane Kiffin needs to be setting up a couple of design plays for Cooper and DeAndre White and Chris John Jones every single game.
Yes.
All three of you veteran guys are each going to, all three of you veteran guys are going to have a couple plays each game designed for y'all. Hey, yes. Let's talk about our other special team standout, man. Old Reuben Foster, man. I like the fire which he played with. I like how he just went out there as a headhunter on special teams and the team kind of pumped him up in the process. You know, I still think this guy's going to leave his mark on this university before it's all said and done. I think when he puts it all together, I mean, Xavier Dixon's a senior this year, and look how he's playing. Reuben Foster is a five-star athlete, and I just was glad to see he was able to contribute to the team.
Yeah, he's got one speed in his go, and when he made a play, I mean, he must be sort of a locker room favorite because when he made a play, you know, that first big hit that he made, it seemed that the whole it looked like almost the whole, you know, roster came out and was celebrating him. And, you know, I was kind of kidding with our buddy Eric that, you know, I like the emotion. I like showing that. Felt a little Georgia-ish to me, but I like the emotion. And he had another big play, a little bit later, and didn't get quite as many of the team members that came out, but certainly the special teams unit kind of helped celebrate. And then he went after the quarterback on another play and got a little dinged up. Trey DePriest was kidding with him at practice today and said, man, you got hurt by a quarterback. I don't even want to talk to you. But it
was definitely good to see, though. I mean, he finished fourth on the stat line on defense and finished the day with five tackles, you know, one for loss, one sack, and probably his best performance in an Alabama uniform. And I just hope he builds off that.
Yeah, I think he's got to throttle his speed a little bit, and he's got to learn to tackle. I think he's, you know, he still lowers his head. And you know, this is a guy that knocks himself out at practice because he's not tackling right. And so that's going to limit his performances, right? That's going to limit his opportunities. But if he can master that, then this guy's going to get a lot more playing time because he certainly has the athleticism. What else on special teams?
You know, the other thing was a play by Landon Collins. You know, Landon Collins had a good day on defense. He had a special teams play that drove me crazy on a punt. He's one of the two gunners. And, you know, he sits there and decides as the ball, first of all, the ball has bounced. He doesn't know where it is. We talked about that frustration in the Arkansas game. So it makes you wonder what the special teams coach has worked on in practice, to be quite fair. He doesn't know where the ball is. He starts walking toward the punt returner like he's taunting him, yep. Like, I dare you to pick the ball up. And then as he comes off the sideline thinking, oh, that was great that I did, Saban calls him over and shares what he thinks about it. And so, I like we have somebody in charge that is not going to put up with that kind of stuff.
All of what you said, I'm fine with. I think the setup, I view the setup a little bit differently. I think Landon did know where the ball was. I think he also knew that he had the other gunner down there with him. And so when he was sort of walking towards the punt returner, and the punt returner was backing up, and he was sort of conducting himself in a way to intimidate the punt returner. And he sort of straddled, walked over the ball, and I think the ball, you know, I think the ball clipped him. The other gunner was right there to down the ball. But what Landon did do, and I'm not advocating that we should do this, he should get a talking to. That should not be part of our punt game. But if you look at it in sort of the context of itself, he helped that punt travel 3 to 5 more yards to back them up a little bit more. And so in a single cell organism that was that play, that was really cool. That was really neat. In the larger context of don't do stupid shit, he should not have done that.
Absolutely not. Hey, you got to see more of your punter, man. Are you happy you're getting to see more looks here?
Well, we saw 5 punts and he averaged 50 yards, and all of our punts came late in the game. And so I got a kick out of, Bama Joe, who sits there with us. At one point he asked, have we punted yet? And at that point, the answer was no. And then within the next few minutes of the ball game, we punt 5 more times. And so that became kind of the running joke is, hey, Joe, you get to see the punter again. And I was fine because I got to see the punter during warmups after the second half. I was okay with that. That satisfied my need to see the punter. I didn't have to see us punt 5 times during the game, but Joe asked, so punter delivered.
anything else that jumped out at you on special teams?
You know, we gave up a 75-yard kick return in the fourth quarter. Defense stepped up and kept them from scoring, which was really good. You made the comment that, you know, should they maybe just kick a field goal to get rid of the shutout, the goose egg? There's something to be said for that. You could also, you know, make the case that, a field goal does really nothing for you. Let's try to score a touchdown. Let's kind of try to make a play on offense. If we're going to get rid of the goose egg, we're going to earn it. And so you can make a case either way for that one. But the fact that we gave away that long kick return, almost lost the shutout, I think there's something we can coach up there.
No, I do. And I was surprised to learn after the ball game that that was the first time in Kevin Sumlin as head coach at Texas A&M that they've ever been shut out.
Yeah.
So that makes you wonder why you don't kick a field goal there.
Yeah, you know, and that's probably a stat. I don't know if he knows it or, you know, whatnot.
Cares, right.
Clearly, probably not. That's something that if you're trying to protect it, you know, you kick a field goal there. So that shows you a little bit about what he's about, right? That, you know, he's not worried about protecting something as simple as, you know, a shutout when we're getting blown out by 59 points. The zero or the three don't really make that much of a difference. And so, you know, he's trying to say, guys, if we're going to get on the scoreboard, we're going to earn it. We're going to get a touchdown. And, you know, and that could be a motivation, but, you know, I think his team was done by then.
Oh, they were. They were absolutely done. I didn't see any signs of giving up, you know, just like stopping on plays. But they definitely didn't seem on the sideline that they were too upset to be down like they were, for sure.
Yeah. Well, tell me, this week we travel to Knoxville to take on the Volunteers of Tennessee. What'd you have in store for that game?
You know, I was surprised at the you know, what did you think of the spread to start with? I mean, you know, we're a 2-touchdown favorite in this ball game. They obviously was not even in the game against Ole Miss by any stretch of the imagination. You know, what do you think we're going to get from Tennessee? I mean, you know, I thought they had a good coaching hire. I thought he was the right guy to turn things around for them. You know, is it a numbers game? Do they just not have the bodies yet?
Yeah, I think it I think it is, and I think that you know he's brought in some good talent. I think he is moving them in the right direction. You know, his sort of motto is, you know, one brick at a time or brick by brick. And that leads to a slow and gradual and methodic building of a program. And I think that's, you know, that's what you're going to get when they've kind of been as down as far as they have. They've shown a lot of tenacity in how they've played this season. A couple of games they probably should have won. They should have beat Georgia. They should have beat Florida. They lose those games. That's deflating. They, you know, they lead Ole Miss, you know, 3-0 for a stretch. And then I think they, you know, they ended up getting housed in that game. So they may be losing their edge, sort of their want to, with those types of performances. You know, they've had to replace their entire offensive line, their entire defensive line. And I think they've had some injuries across the offensive front. So I think there's some depth issues. There's some just players getting just getting beat up, not able to play. Some attrition, I guess, is really what I'm looking for there. So 14 sounds about right. They're gonna go back home and kind of regroup themselves. But I just don't think they have the depth of personnel to hang, especially if we can take some of this momentum back out on the road. And I think that we will be able to. I'm kind of predicting that that this was sort of a pivot point in our season. So I think we take some of this energy with us on the road to Knoxville. And, you know, last time we were 14-point favorites over A&M, I didn't think that we would cover. Here we are, and I think we will. I think we beat them by 17-24 something, or 17-24 points, something in that range. I might predict a 34-10 kind of ball game.
Okay. Well, it definitely has been a tough schedule. I mean, you know, this is a team, like you said, about the Georgia. You know, right before that Georgia, they went to Oklahoma, right?
Yeah.
Which is a tough place to play. Yep. They had a bye week before they played Georgia, which makes me just wonder if that, you know, that Georgia-Florida – it makes you wonder if that Georgia-Florida stretch just did them in, because those are their that's their Auburn, right? That's their rival. But I was surprised to find out that this team is ranked 19th in the country on total defense, and they're ranked 6th in the country on passing yards allowed. This team's only given up 166 yards a game through the air, and so and they're pretty okay against the run. So you got a top 20 defense that plays good in the secondary, you know, we better come with our run game, because if we don't, I don't think there's going to be these, you know, 7 yard cushions like we saw against Texas A&M.
Right.
I don't think they're going to lose 34-3 like they did against Ole Miss. It is Alabama, right? This is a big game for them.
Sure.
And so I think 14 is just doesn't sound right to me. I think we're going to have a letdown. I think we're going to be confident after this game. I think we're going to see something like a 24-13 game. Maybe we barely cover and win 27-13, but I think we're going to come back from this game frustrated. I think our on the road struggles are going to continue.
Okay. I think we see Blake kind of shed some of that. I think that I think this is a trip back home from him, or you know, literally this game against A&M was him coming back home, filling his tank up again. I think that he is going to want to, he committed to Tennessee. He decommitted to us to commit to Lane Kiffin at Tennessee. And so I think he's going to have a little mustard in his tank. I think Kiffin is as well. I think that's going to add to, some of the fever that the crowd's going to have. But I think we're going to take the crowd right out of it. I think we see, that next progression in Blake's development. That's what I think we see Saturday. And that's where I get, kind of a 17-point or 24-point victory for the Tide.
Man, I hope your score is right and mine's wrong.
Yes, me too. Anything else? Anything we missed?
No, man. I'm just ready for it to be Saturday again. Let's just forget the work week and get back to football.
If only we could. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on BamaHammer.com. And roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.